Hi everyone. So I just wanted to start today's podcast by letting you know that we have Get Doper as our sponsor of today's episode. Now you probably heard me talk about Get Doper quite a bit on the podcast over the past few months. And that is because I've been taking this supplement now for probably 6 months and I really believe in it. I believe that it works and that's why I keep asking them to come back and sponsor the podcast because I'm hearing from you guys that it's also working as well. So I wanted to let you know that Get Doper is 3 capsules taken once a day. So you take them and then it's done. They are a nutritional supplement created by an ADHD founder purely because he knew what was desperately needed to help him as a neurodivergent individual. So Get Doper includes 16 high quality bioavailable ingredients that support our mental performance, mood, focus, energy, and our brain health. And they also work to support the neurotransmitters, which are the building blocks to dopamine, and strengthen, very importantly, our central nervous system, something that I talk about a huge amount on the podcast. So I know that I'm hearing from many of you guys who are using the discount code, which is KATE10 to get 10% off. And that you're telling me how effective Get Doper has been, which is why I keep reinforcing it back as a sponsor. But it's also been backed by clinical experts, by ADHD experts, such as Dr. Rachel Gow and Sarah Osborne, who know that these ingredients are fantastic for the ADHD brain and the nervous system. So we've got 10% discount. Use the code KATE10. It's getdoper.com or head to the show notes. You'll see all the information there and the link to get the discount. Now let's get started with today's podcast. Welcome to the ADHD Women's Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Kate Moore Youssef, and I'm a wellbeing and lifestyle coach, EFT practitioner, mum to 4 kids, and passionate about helping more women to understand and accept their amazing ADHD brains. After speaking to many women just like me, and probably you, I know there is a need for more health and lifestyle support for women newly diagnosed with ADHD. In these conversations, you'll learn from insightful guests, hear new findings and discover powerful perspectives and lifestyle tools to enable you to live your most fulfilled, calm, and purposeful life wherever you are on your ADHD journey. Here's today's episode. I am here today to talk about probably one of my favorite conversations, and that is coaching and also positive psychology. And positive psychology has always been something for me that I've lent on and I've talked about and I love sharing on the podcast. And today we have an expert and her name is Ruth Cudsey. And Ruth is a coach. She's a psychologist and trainer with nearly 30 years experience studying psychology. And she's also fascinated by how positive psychology tools can be used by all of us to feel better and enhance well-being. She's an ICF Master Certified Coach, best-selling author, leading podcaster, and international speaker focusing on well-being and coaching. You sound like the perfect guest for this podcast. Ruth, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been really exciting to know that you've been coming on the podcast because I know that these types of conversations are always really, really helpful for the listeners. And today we're going to be talking about your book, which I've got right in front of me, entitled How to Feel Better, a 4 steps to self-coach your way to a happier, more authentic life. And I think the word self-coach or self-coaching is really empowering in this kind of conversation because it's not that easy for everyone to have a one-to-one coach. And I hate the thought of ever making people feel that they, you know, unless they get a coach, they're doomed. And there are lots of other ways of self-development and self-coaching. And I know this book, from when I read through the different chapters, I was really, really excited by some of the practical offers that you were giving people because it's great to know that we don't have to just have coaching. We can do this through a book. Was that your priority when you were writing this book? Is like, how can someone help themselves while reading this book?
Yes, 100%. Because I think as well, like, coaching is brilliant, but it's expensive. So obviously we might get coaching at work. And we know, like, if we have ADHD, we might be able to get coaching through Access to Work if we can navigate that, because it's not the easiest to navigate if you have ADHD. But actually, there's this whole group of people who might not be able to afford coaching or might not be ready to access coaching. And one of the things about coaching, and actually I noticed about training coaches, people kept saying to me, one of the real rewards is that I've learned to self-coach. I was like, yeah, what if everybody was able to self-coach? What if everybody was able to take a step back and reflect and then think about where they go? What if everybody, what if that was a skill that we all had? It would be a much better world to live in. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't, it doesn't mean that we're always self-coaching and we never kind of fly off the handle or get something wrong. It doesn't mean that. It means that we're able to, the majority of the time, bring ourselves back, reflect, and think about where we go next. And I think for me, that is the power. It's about recognizing ourselves a bit better. And we can all do that. Like, all of us are able to. And that is the magic, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask you what your definition of self-coaching is.
So I think self-coaching is when we are able to assess where we are and our situation and find a way forward. It's not always an action. It might be a reflection. It might be a thought. But it's when we're able to go, okay, this happened, or I'm feeling this, therefore. So it's about making those connections.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting to know because, you know, we don't even use this terminology, self-coaching. And I always think, you know, if this was what kids were taught in school, if they were given these skills from a really early age to know how to build their resilience, pick themselves up, use perspective. And it is really hard. I know that, you know, the greatest minds are fantastic at giving advice, but find it very difficult to take the advice themselves. And myself included, that so many of us, you know, if we're coaches and actually we're also dealing with stuff ourselves. It doesn't mean that you've got your shit together. If you are coaching, you're a psychologist or a therapist. But I think that the self-coaching element is being able to recognize, like you say, like recognize where you are, see yourself, maybe sort of like hover above and kind of think, okay, what tools do I have right now to help myself? And this is what I really loved about your book, is that it's sort of just next step tools, isn't it? It's just like where you are right now, seeing yourself, and then just kind of like, what's the next easy or effortless or best next step that we can take just to help ourselves over that line? You mentioned ADHD, obviously, being on the podcast. I know that you've had a relatively recent diagnosis, and I was wondering how, I guess, you know, you've been doing this for a while, psychologist, you've been training, you've been coaching. When did you start noticing your own ADHD, and how has that helped you, I guess, on your journey?
Do you know what? I didn't recognize my own ADHD. So I didn't recognize it. I was prompted by my mother, who read an article and said, this explains everything. So actually, it was an article in the Times. So, right, you know, I was a deputy head teacher. I worked with loads of kids that had ADHD, and I saw ADHD presenting in a particular way. I also worked with clients who had ADHD, and they were talking about things. And sometimes I'd feel like, oh yeah, that sounds familiar. But I didn't ever, for whatever reason, I never reflected and thought that was part of me. And then my mum sent me this article from the Times, and it basically was like, signs that you might have ADHD. And let's just say, I can't remember how many there were, let's just say there were 12 signs. And she just sent it to me and said, this explains everything. And I was like, oh my gosh, it is so me. Everything that has been talked about here are things that I have gone through, things that I recognize, you know, down to things like really struggling with being tidy and making myself feel really bad. Okay. Down to social rejection. So I feel that, you know, that rejection sensitivity, down to that, down to impulsivity, you know, and sometimes making decisions like, you know, spending and finding it challenging around money. And there were so many things. And it's so interesting because we all have a different response, don't we, to diagnosis. For me, I was like, oh, this is why I'm like this. And it actually gave me peace. And the ironic thing is, I went to study psychology when I was 18 because I wanted to know, why am I like this? Is there anybody else who's like this? Because I feel like I'm navigating life in a different way. And so it was like my whole life I've been looking for what was it that made me different, but I'd never looked at that. And I guess that might have been the culture that we grew up in. But yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah, my mum said in her text, and I love my mum dearly, she said, we oh, we didn't really know about it then. And I was like, look, I know my mum really well. That's kind of her disclaimer. And that's her way of saying, I'm sorry. Like, that's all I'm going to get from her. I know, what can I control? What can't I control? I think the way that my mum did it was her way of saying, I understand you. But, you know, it's very easy for us to go into blame. And when we've got a new identity, one of the things that we need to let go of is, well, we need to practice forgiveness of ourselves and others. So if we go, right, we've just found out, or we're just realizing that maybe you've got ADHD, and that maybe has impacted our relationships or our working life, whatever it may be. First of all, it's about forgiving yourself. Like, this is the key positive psychology thing, and going, I was doing what I could in that situation, and now I recognize that my neurodivergence made it more challenging for me. So I'm going to be nice to that 18, 25, 30, 35-year-old version of me and forgive them. But also, it's about forgiving those people around us, because actually, like, for my mum, she had a lot going on when I was growing up, but right then, you know, where I went to primary school, they did not, and when I look back at my primary school class, there were a lot of people who were neurodivergent, but that wasn't something that, it just wasn't in the realm of reference. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy to go, oh, they should have done, but actually you go, you know, if you can let go, you're going to be happier. You're going to be, you know, you're going to live a better life. And you're also going to go into, we can't blame people for whatever happened.
Yeah. Feel like it's a decision, it's a choice that we do have to make, because this process of getting the diagnosis, especially when it's later on, especially when there's been so many challenges and so much chaos and upheaval and changes. And I see this, you know, in my community of like people who have changed careers many times. There's lots of shame and embarrassment, and then there's blame, and that's just so many negative emotions to be holding on to. And I'm not saying that none of it is valid, because so much of it is valid. But I do believe that when we get the diagnosis or the acknowledgement, and we are able to kind of go, now, okay, what do I want my next chapter to be? Like, what do I want this new identity to look like? And how can I begin to start letting go, like you say, and releasing and forgiving? And it's not just like an overnight thing where we click our fingers and I'm like, oh, like I'm cleansed. Yeah. I've had a spiritual awakening. But it is daily choices, isn't it? These incremental choices that we have to make a decision. It's like, okay, am I going to lean into this? Am I going to start taking on new ways of being and new, I don't know, behaviors and choices and actions to start kind of crafting or creating a life that works better for me on my terms? I wrote down here in my notes, future self. And I think I picked up on that in the book. And I just wondered maybe if you could sort of talk a little bit about that, because the us today is kind of cheerleading that future self of ours, isn't it? Can you explain a little bit about what the future self is?
Yeah. So the future self, like when we're thinking about like, who am I going to be in the future? It's about thinking about, okay, what do I want to have achieved? What are those things that are important to me? And then from there, okay, who am I being then? How am I showing up? How am I thinking? How am I feeling? How am I responding to people? Who have I got around me? It's about being able to do that reflective piece to then go, right, okay, this is who I want to be. Where do I start? And, you know, when we're talking about things like habits, like James Clear talks about a lot of this in Atomic Habits, but he says like every action that we take, every behavior that we do is a vote for the kind of person that we want to become. And I think that we can get really, and I think this is part of my, well, it's part of me, whether it's ADHD or something else, I can be really all or nothing. And what I find that I'm really, really extreme on actually is diet and exercise, much more now than I used to be. But I was finding that I would be doing, you know, something really extreme for like 4 days and then, yeah. And I'm like, this just doesn't work. Like, actually, who do I want to be? And I had to reimagine, like, right, I want to be healthy. I want to be strong. Like, that's super important to me. So actually, what am I doing today as that vote? So it doesn't have to be extreme. And that really, really helped me, because for the last, well, 2021, January 2021 onwards, so nearly 3 years, I've struggled in that field and I hadn't struggled before. So it's just interesting sometimes to go, right, if I am that, like, why am I doing this? But who is that person and what behaviors and thoughts and beliefs support me becoming that person?
Yeah. And I think it's so powerful that you kind of, you know, share your vulnerabilities and your challenges, because, you know, when you sort of read out your biog and you kind of think, well, she's definitely going to have it all together now because, you know, she's got all this understanding. But actually, anyone, even if you're doing the work, you're still doing the work continuously. There's always going to be these hurdles, and there's always going to be, and we have to kind of recognize that of, it's not going to be, you know, once I've read this book, once I've done this course, once I've gone on this meditation retreat, everything's going to be fine. It's compassion to ourselves that we are going to have these more difficult days, weeks, months, you know, even years, where it isn't going to be as easy as it was. And yeah, and I think definitely, you know, as we're getting older with perimenopause, it's a struggle. You know, even today, I was so close to cancelling my gym session this morning, and haven't slept well this weekend. And I thought, oh, I just can't, just want to just like chill and just catch up on emails and whatever. But I knew I was kind of going into that future self of me of thinking, today's Monday, Wednesday or Thursday, I'm going to be annoyed at myself that I cancelled the gym. I'm going to be annoyed that I didn't do it, because that's my kind of like Monday session and I always feel better for it. And I did feel better. And so I have to kind of almost, even though today I didn't really feel like doing it, I know that the Wednesday or Thursday me will appreciate this. And so I'm constantly on this treadmill of doing the things and hoping that the version of me in a few days or a few weeks is going to appreciate it. I know it sounds tiring to be like this. However, it does, like you say, you know, the actions, your behaviors, your beliefs, it does start becoming easier and we just do it, as opposed to it being like a whole big kind of spiral of overthinking and ruminating and shame and everything that maybe we would have done if we didn't have all this self-awareness. If you had to say, someone says to you, what does positive psychology bring? Like, how's it going to change my life? What would you say, you know, is something that comes to mind for that?
So, okay, I'll give you a couple of things. So first of all, people seem to think that positive psychology is that you become like a Pollyanna and everything is amazing and la, 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 and you're only positive. That isn't the case. Really, what you're looking to do is you're looking to change the balance of your dominant emotions. So you're looking to interact with things in a more positive way, in a more negative way. That doesn't mean that we don't feel emotions that we classify as negative. I call them unhelpful. I don't like negative. Like, those are there for a function. It's great to feel angry, resentful, sad. You know, all of those things are there and they give us data and they tell us things. But what you're wanting to do is you're wanting to shift. And one of the reasons that you want to shift into more of a positive outlook and interaction with the world is actually that works more effectively with your brain. Because when we are more in that negative outlook, it often puts us into threat mode. And what that means is that our cognitive function, like the areas at the front of our brain, prefrontal cortex and dorsal frontal, ventrolateral front, all of those areas are not able to process as effectively. Basically, we're not as smart, okay? Because our brain is dealing with the stressor. So it works from that point of view. But also, it does mean that we are going to live a life where we're higher on well-being. Again, doesn't mean that we're not going to get ill, doesn't mean that we're not going to get mental illness, right? But it means that we're more likely on average to have a life where we are generally better, you know? And I think that's all that we can do. We're like, okay, this is going to make me think a bit better and be a bit better. Overall, it's like our baseline has shifted upwards. When people criticize positive psychology, I think they don't really understand it, because they don't go, you know, this isn't about discrediting, you know, negative thinking, but it's actually going all or nothing thinking or catastrophizing, which I used to be a queen of, by the way.
Oh yeah.
I'd be like, I'd be like, my husband has taken my kids shopping or something, let's just say. And I have guessed it's going to take them 10 minutes to get back from when they've just said, and it's 11 minutes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what's happened? Yeah. I was the queen of that. And I still have to stop myself and go, okay, how likely is this to have happened? knowing my husband, he would have stopped to get some sweets or something because that's what he's driven. He has so much sugar in his diet. So he would have stopped it. But, you know, it's about being able to stop and take a reality check. This doesn't mean that bad things don't happen, but it means that you are engaging with the world in a much more positive way. And it actually means, because as someone with ADHD, I tend to be like that. I tend to be quite up and down. Yeah. And I felt it's moderated. That doesn't mean that I'm suddenly super calm.
Yeah.
But it means that I'm calmer.
Yeah. I love that. And, you know, I think you might have been reading my mind there, Ruth, because I'm also the queen of catastrophization. And I know it's very much an ADHD thing. You know, our default mode network is programmed to be much more powerful towards negativity bias and negative thinking. And that's why, sadly, many of us do suffer with mental health problems such as depression and anxiety. Anxiety, for sure. I don't know one ADHD person that doesn't suffer in some way with anxiety. Sometimes I can't override it with the positive psychology or the CBT or the things that I kind of have learned about, because there is neural programming in our brain with having ADHD that it can lead us down that route. But what I do find is that I can interrupt it, I can stop it, and I can almost distance myself from it and give it a different voice. And I can see it, and I see it, my mum's very similar as well, and I can say, do I want to live like this in this constant, you know, cycle of catastrophization? And the problem is the world at the moment is very, very fear-based and anxiety-led. Mm. And, you know, the world events at the moment are just horrific. And if we are watching the news and we're on social media, I think maybe, would you say right now for many of us to feel like this is normal and for us to maybe just have some self-compassion as well?
Yeah, 100%. And like, right, okay. So there's another kind of thing of positive psychology that I love, which is, it's from Stephen Covey, circles of control and circles of influence. And when we are spending so much time in what we can't control, and I know this, like a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, longer when you listen to this, I spent so much time on X and I was reading all of this stuff and I was getting really anxious. And okay, I admit I'm not like mum of the year sometimes. And then I was like, in the morning, I was talking to my 9-year-old about it. Like, what was I doing? Because I was in such a heightened sense. And I was like, really? And then I'm like, okay, who is this serving? Because it's not serving me. It's not serving my poor children. It's not serving anyone. I'm not helping anyone. So I had to have a word with myself, but I still do it. Like, I still go down those holes. And I know, oh no, actually I should come back to what I can control, what can't I control. My husband was like, did you sleep last night? I'm like, no. And like a simple thing, like, remember not to have your phone in the bedroom. Because as well, ADHD, we crave dopamine. So things like social media apps, we get really, like, we can get super addicted. You know? I mean, I remember even, slight aside, but I remember even like when I was traveling, there was this Pac-Man machine in the hostel. And I was so obsessed at getting like the high score on that. I spent hours on the Pac-Man machine because I got dopamine from it. Like now when I look back, and then I went back to the same hostel like 3 years later and they're like, Ruth, someone has beaten your score. I'm like, quickly get back on. I mean, like, you know, yeah, so
we find
it. Be kind to ourselves and go, okay, this is partly how I'm wired. And what I've just done, like, let's be kind. Like, I've done, like, yeah, I did the Pac-Man because of whatever, but I've spent my time on here because I genuinely care about what's going on in the world. What I've recognized now is this isn't the best way of showing that I care.
Yeah. What you talked about then, the circles of control and circles of influence, that's really important. So I understand the circles of control. What's the circles of influence?
Okay, so circle of control is what we can control. So three circles. Circle of control is what we can control in the middle. Then we have our circle of influence outside that, which are things that we can influence if we are in control. So what can we influence? We can influence how successful our business is by some of our business development. We can influence our relationship by how we show up, but we can't control it. And then what we can't control is a third circle.
Okay, I like that. I'm gonna have that there. Because we do try and control things that we can't control. And we do like to try and think that we can. And when we can't, it's very frustrating. And then we look and think how depleting and exhausting that is. And burnout for us, especially as neurodivergent women, if we're running our own businesses, it's really prevalent and it's really normal. And when I say normal, I say it's very common, and it can be really hard. And when we can see ourselves and know ourselves and give ourselves that moment to pause and say, right, okay, what can we change? What can I control? What can't I control? That does give us a more empowerment as to like, okay, you know what? It's okay to step back now. It's okay to put my phone down, close my laptop, take a break, go on holiday, all these different things, because what I can't control that situation. So I may as well just kind of take a breather. And I'm saying this now to remind myself, if I'm honest, because I do struggle. I do struggle with all of that. I'm just learning on the job. This is why I love this podcast, because I get to be able to, it gives me this time to reflect. Because, you know, how often do you get to have these conversations where you can talk to other people and externalize what's going on? And I love being able to bring different people like yourself into the podcast, because it allows me this hour to be able to talk and see where I'm doing okay, where I'm not doing okay. And your book that you've written, I feel like is a very good way of doing that, because you can read each chapter and kind of go, oh, okay, now I understand why I do that. I understand my behavior. And actually there are actionable things, but there's also some stuff that it's okay, and I just need to forgive myself and accept and maybe do better or maybe not do better. And, you know, that's just the way it is. I wanted to talk about something, I guess, the energetic side, but also the visualization and how you see that being done and how it can be helpful in day-to-day life and what you do it for. And and if someone's sort of saying, well, I've heard about visualization, but what is it all about?
Well, so this is even more interesting, because I actually can't visualize and see images. So there's about 5% of people who've got something called aphantasia. I don't think I've got all of it, but I've got some of it. So I remember when I first did visualization, people were like, close your eyes and imagine where you are. And I'm like, I can't do it. But actually, I'm very good at like kind of writing down where I want to be. I'm very good at like, when I've seen something, I can then imagine it. Or I can like, you know, vision boards can work really well for me as well. But I can feel things. How do I want to feel? So really interestingly, so I'm sitting in my office right now and I'm looking out the window, and out of the window is the forest, okay? So I decided, I was really clear from about 2020 that we were going to live somewhere opposite the forest. But it wasn't like necessarily completely opposite. It was like that I was going to be able to walk out of my house with a coffee and go for a walk in the forest every day. And like this, okay, so my husband, I think, is neurodivergent too. So we bought this house and we didn't realize it was opposite the forest. Because I thought that bit opposite it was just a bit of green. And I don't know why we didn't think it was opposite the forest. But anyway, I think it's because we like put the offer in, it was locked down, everything else, everything was crazy. And then I remember coming to see it and I'm like, oh my God, like this is exactly what I wanted. So like it's about setting the intention. The thing is that when we set the intention, we value tag things. So we're saying to our brain, this is important. And what is great about that is therefore we start to, there's a theory by Fredrickson, who is, I think she's called Barbara Fredrickson, who's a positive psychologist, that when we say what's important, we broaden our horizons to look at possibility and we build on that possibility. So that's how it, that's one way that it can work, but also visualization can work. So that kind of, where do I want to be? It's that beginning of building a new neural pathway. Okay, well, how do I get there? What's the first thing? It's we think and then we do. And that's how we strengthen those pathways in our brain.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You don't need to see it. You can think it, reflect it. You can feel it. You can draw it. You can, you know, there's so many different ways. So if normal visualization, if you can't close your eyes and imagine it, just test other things. See what works for you.
Yeah. And I think what's important to say is that this isn't like a spiritual woo-woo technique. You know, this is like based in science. I've heard, I think it's Novak Djokovic. He talks about visualization, you know, every time he visualizes winning Wimbledon as he begins. And that's just literally every tournament he's there and he's lifting the trophy. And he's talked about it in a way that he's been coached by science-based coaches who explain all about the neural pathways and exactly that we are rewiring our brains to seek what it is that we're looking for and clearing away the, I guess, the debris, the muck, and giving ourselves clarity of giving us that one path. And I've used visualization loads in my capacity because I'm the same as you, Ruth. And it's really interesting that you say that because I close my eyes and I've got a coach who sort of does very specific visualizations, and I struggle with it. I struggle with the, you know, go down the path and turn left and see yeah, a forest and da 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 da. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm lost. But when, and then I'm like in my head, my ADHD brain's going, I'm lost. I'm meant to be down there and I'm up there and da da da. But I know that there's things I'm visualizing for the future and I feel like I embody it. I feel it. And I can kind of see it in different ways. And so I guess what I'd like to say to people who also maybe struggle with certain techniques is like, don't worry. Like there's ways around it where you can just, you know, if you want to say, I want to feel, like you said, stronger. I want to feel healthier. I want to feel more energized. There's always a way of bringing that in. How am I going to do that? Oh, because I want to go walk on the beach every day. All these different things. And then it's make those little steps of, okay, a friend's just invited me to go to Hastings for the weekend. I'm going to go and walk on the beach there. And you have to kind of follow those little breadcrumbs and not be too cynical as to where you're going, I guess. I mean, I love bringing in sort of those kind of serendipitous moments when we start bringing visualizing, because we're able to then say, oh, actually, okay, I've called that in. That's not just a coincidence. I've visualized something, and then the phone rang or the message came through or the article in that magazine I'm reading all of a sudden says, and that, I think that's our brain's way of the neural pathways. I'm sort of blending a few modalities together there, but would you say that's something that you use a lot of when you're coaching your clients?
Yeah. And actually loads of these things say similar things, like, okay, so we know neural pathways. We know that that's like how that's built. And then we've got Fredrickson, and then but everyone's saying kind of that it's like their own perspective on how this works, right? And so then science is used to test it. So things like imagining your best possible future self. Well, the research, like they've done a meta-analysis of studies, they found that that helped people to feel like increase their positive effect. So increase their propensity to feel positive emotions and interact with the world in a more positive way and increase their well-being. So, you know, this stuff does work, but it's sometimes it's like explaining how. There's so many different routes into how, and it's probably a bit of all of them.
I've got also my notes here. I guess the desire and the purpose and the meaning. And I really do feel that from an ADHD perspective, for us to be fulfilled and have well-being in our life, we really do need to have this purpose and meaning in our life. And I, you know, I speak to a lot of people who are on amazing salaries in corporate jobs, and they've got to the place that they're meant to be where they are, you know, in their career. And there's no purpose and there's no meaning there. And they feel listless and they feel depressed. And then they make that decision that they're going to go more with purpose. And I do believe that we are more purpose-led. I think that, I mean, whether that's a sweeping statement or not, but I do, the people I speak to who are ADHD really get their energy from having a purposeful life. And what would you say to someone that's listening here and they're going, yeah, that's me. I'm in this job and it's sucking my soul dry. And I don't know where, I'm too scared. There's just too much fear around, you know, finishing or jacking it in and starting to live with more purpose. Where does someone begin?
Okay, so I think it's about starting to think about, first of all, what purpose means to them, where they find a lot of purpose, and yeah, really thinking about how they can build on that purpose. So yeah, what are the things? When do I feel like I've got purpose? What does that look like? How do I know? What am I thinking? What am I feeling? What's going on with my body? It's like kind of doing that investigation for all of those pieces. And then, right, where am I now? Okay. And where do I want to be? Really taking that time to go, okay, and so what can I do? Like, what is the first thing? Maybe it's like, I don't really know what my purpose is. Maybe I'm there. But wherever you are, it's okay. So it's starting where you are and building from where you are as well.
Yeah. Okay. So say someone is thinking, oh, you know, I just need more purpose in my life, but I don't even know what my purpose is. Mm. It's kind of like, well, what's the thing that I'm being called to? Is it volunteering at the weekend? Is it helping with a charity? Is it organizing an event? You know, is it literally just kind of going, I feel called to this. I'm just going to see, because this is how these like things, these crossroads in our lives happen, where we make a decision just to be a bit brave and just say, I'm just going to try this. I'm just going to volunteer that weekend doing this thing and, you know, see where it takes me. I guess it's removing this outcome. I think there's so much pressure. And I do believe it is kind of like social media based of find your purpose, live with authenticity, and like these big sweeping kind of statements of if you're not living a purposeful life, you know, it's all to pot. But actually, when we remove all that pressure from ourselves, we can find that purpose. And maybe our purpose isn't in our career.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, we're so obsessed by career, aren't we? Like, that's where we need to have our purpose. But maybe that's not. It's about actually, where do we find it? And how do we know that we found it? Yeah, that's another great question to think about.
Yeah. Well, Ruth, thank you so much. It's been fascinating, and I really would recommend your book, How to Feel Better, 4 Steps to Self-Coach Your Way to a Happier, More Authentic Life. I guess you can buy it on all,
all websites. Main platforms.
Can you tell people, like, do you coach people now, or are you sort of just training coaching? And if people really, you know, have resonated with what you're saying, where can they find more of you?
So I do coach a very limited amount of people. I mainly train people in coaching skills. So that is the main thing that I do. So I train people to become coaches. I also support people to develop their own accreditations. So I do that as well. I've got ADHD, right? So I do lots of different things, but mainly it's the training, and it's supporting people to develop their own academies as well.
Okay. And how, last question, how do you prevent your burnout cycles? What are your ways around it? Because you sound like a very busy woman.
Oh my gosh. So I completely resonate with doing more, doing more, doing more, doing more. So I have to get people to, like, I have to make hard breaks. I have to kind of tell my team, I'm not available here. I have to have conversations with my family and go, look, I need support on this. So there's lots of things that I need to do. For me, it's about making sure that I am getting other people to support me so I'm more accountable, because I'm awful if I'm like, I'm really bad. Like, so again, it's like, you know, it's having my own coach, it's looking at all of those things. You know, that does make a difference too.
Yeah, we all need accountability, don't we? And we all need that help and that reminder that we can't do it all. We need to delegate, and we need those boundaries. So yeah, thank you, Ruth, for that.
Thank you so much.
I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did and it resonated with you, I would absolutely love it if you could share on your platforms, or maybe leave a review and a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please do check out my website, adhdwomenswellbeing.co.uk, for lots of free resources and paid for workshops. I'm uploading new things all the time, and I would absolutely love to see you there. Take care, and see you for the next episode.